Today on Ask the Podcast Coach, we've got some insights from the New Media Expo. We're going to ask the question, do I really need a mixer? And of course, your calls.
Let's get ready to podcast.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good Saturday morning. Welcome to Ask the Podcast Coach. That'd be me, Dave Jackson. This is where we take your calls live. And that just reminds me, I forgot to do that, Jim. I love live calls. Here,
we got talking and you forgot to bring in the live
model. Over there is Jim Collison from theaverageguy.tv. And yeah, I was so excited to get back and that whole nine yards. So we're going to do this live today. It'll be kind of fun. If you've ever wondered how to use,
you could walk through what you go through to bring in the,
we're going to bring in the live show. So I'm in my call-in studio module here. That's funny that I forgot to do this. And, let me see here. I've got to, okay. So I'm in my module. I go to my shows. Here we go. I'm going to host the show. So it's going to, I have to dial in a phone number for, the host line. So I'm going to turn this down so I don't, it's very loud. So Jim, you're going to be off for a second. Forgive me.
Okay.
Or at least I'll turn it down maybe. And, so I'm dialing this number. Now I'm using the keypad on Skype to dial this in and, you'll hear it come on here. The lovely, and I've done that. So I've added the keypad and now I hit enter. I believe is how I work. Because what I've done is I'm in Skype and I'm adding participants to add people to this call. And I believe I actually saved this. Yeah, here we go. We'll just type in the old number. This will make things even better. The fun thing is my number is behind me, so I'm not looking at my number, so I keep looking over my shoulder. I have dialed the wrong number. That was kind of fun 1 week. And here we go. I'm going to add this to the call. And now you'll hear Jim and the lovely call-in studio people. Here we go.
The number you dialed is not in service.
It's not in service. See, it's the pressure. Oh, the pressure of dialing live. I feel like, remember when Letterman used to do this? He'd,
yes.
See, I really thought, here we go. Host line. So how are you feeling there, Jim? I know you weren't feeling great.
It's been a tough couple days here at the Collison House. I've hunkered down and I did get a couple podcasts done while I was sick. So it's doable.
There you go. Now,
thank you for calling Collin Studios host and call screener line. Please enter your show number and press pound.
So there's my show number.
Enter your 6-digit PIN number.
Okay. I got to enter my fun filled 6-digit. All right. Let's do that for a second. That is blah, blah, blah. Got to make sure I get this one right or he'll yell at me. The call-in studio man. And here we go.
You have not started a show session in call-in studio. And cannot yet receive calls on Ask the Podcast Coach.
But now I'm going to start
Please
the show.
Please visit the call. Welcome, host.
There
you
we go.
You are now in the host room and can manage your callers from the call-in studio web interface.
Wow, that was cool. Web interface. The number again is 888-563-3228. That was fun. So my question is, when you were sick, did you just say, hey, I'm sick, so I sound weird, or did you just not even mention it?
No, I didn't even mention it in most cases. I think on my show, so I got really sick on Wednesday and had to cancel out of a podcast. It was too sick to even jump on. It has some fever and, you know, those kinds of things. And you can't like pass out in the middle of the show. So, I canceled that one, but my own on Thursday, I had gotten better enough by Thursday I mentioned it, cause folks knew I was out. Very similar crowds follow me both on Wednesday and on Thursday. And so they knew I was sick on Wednesday. So Thursday's tweets were like, hey, I'm still a little bit under the weather, but come and join us anyways, you know, and I didn't make a big deal about it, right? We just got in there, got it done. I just mentioned, hey, you know, thanks for the nice words of encouragement. And then we moved right on. I don't think you need to make, especially in the time shifted mode, I don't think you need to make that big of a deal of it. Just get in, get it done. You know, there were times I told the guest on Thursday, I said, hey, every once in a while, I'm going to mute and I'm going to step off camera for a sec. Just keep talking and I'll be right back. And he did a nice job, a tech guy. He did a nice job of just, he just kept talking. It didn't phase him. You would never even know it if you listen to the audio. And so it was just one of those things. We just kind of moved on. I think, you know, as Podcasters Day, sometimes we apologize for things that people don't even notice or don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I know when I was at the New Media Expo, Gary Leland is putting out this magazine for podcasters called Podtertainment. And it's going to be coming out in February. And he interviewed me outside. And it was hilarious because it was, I don't know, maybe a 2-3 minute interview. And it was on camera. And, you know, first a helicopter flew over. And we're kind of politely ignored the fact that there's the sound of this helicopter really flying right over us. And then a second and a third. And then they started flowing over two at a time. So I don't know what we were next to. Some sort of helicopter something.
Maybe it was the paparazzi taking pictures of it.
So we eventually just, you know, we just called attention to the elephant in the room and kind of went, yeah, we know there are helicopters here and that's, you know, it's making it fun. And so there are times, I think, in a case like that where it's just obvious, but you're right. I think there are a lot of things that we really obsess over that the audience doesn't even know. I know I obsessed over a fan noise for probably the first 3 years I was podcasting, and I would, you know, just start off the show with, oh, I'm trying to do this. And then finally, Rich Palmer, a friend of mine, emailed in and said, Dave, I have no idea what you're talking about. I can't hear it. I don't know what it is. Please move on. Because it was really getting annoying.
Yeah. So those little things like that, I think you can, if you've heard me before, my voice is a little scratchy this morning, but everybody, it happens. I think the key is, and we did a gala podcast yesterday. In fact, we had a big show, 400 or 500 again live. You just push through it, right? You just get in there and you just get her done and don't worry about it too much. And I typically call in from the office studio there at Gallup, and I just stayed home and used the averageguy.tv studios to get it done. And we just did it. Nobody made a big deal about it, and you move forward.
That's it. The show must go on.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about today, we'll talk about New Media Expo a little more as well, but I've seen this in the, I think it's just called Podcasters. I forget what it is, the Google group, what it's actually called. It's got 1,000 people in it. And everybody's, which is great. Everybody's getting ramped up.
Podcasters.
Yeah, is that it? Yeah.
I think so.
And everybody's getting ramped up for the new year, and everybody's talking about getting new gear. And I've had more people say, I'm going to buy a mixer. And my question is always, okay, what are you mixing? Because in some cases, these are solo podcasters. And they're kind of like we're doing. They're talking with their friends via Skype. And I'm like, okay, unless you're doing fun stuff like this, where you're saying, call in the call and you're mixing in sounds. And that number again, 888-563-3228. You know, you're mixing in sound effects. There's really, or there's somebody in the room with you that you're mixing in sound. I don't really see where you need a mixer. Am I missing something there?
No, I agree with you. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up because I've seen that a lot too. And I was like, what is going on? Did Mackie and Behringer and Alesis all in Yamaha all of a sudden go on a marketing rampage? Because it seems like every podcaster I know is asking for recommendations for it. And, you know, I have to admit, I've kind of perpetuated the myth that if you go to my gear page, if you go to theaverageguy.tv/gear, although I don't have my mixer out there, so I guess I can't be a culprit to it. But I've talked about the mixer that I use, and we talked about it a couple shows back, and I'm solo podcast and I just prefer it because I get more control over my microphone with the mixer than in, you know, I have a little 8-channel, but really 4 only XLRs. And if I want to add some sound effects, I could, and add another PC in or whatever. So it does give me some more options when I'm podcasting. Although I have to admit, I'm a 1-channel wonder 99% of the time, you know, with it.
Well, yeah, that's when I first started. Why I used a mixer is I needed to get basically into the line in jack of my PC. And so I just plugged into a mixer, took a RCA cable, you know, on the record out, and went into my computer. It was just an interface to get into the computer. And it wasn't until later that they, you know, invented all these cool USB devices that you can just plug right in, or, you know, any kind of adapter to get in. Really wasn't something you could buy at a guitar center. I found out later you could order them online where they have, you know, like an XLR that goes into the microphone and then an 1/8 inch out to go into your line in. And even that gets kind of weird.
They've got some pretty nice USB devices now that are just 2 XLR channels. And that's a really, if you want to interface, you know, where you can get a little bit of control over your mic and you need to have XLR, mm-hmm. you know, if you got a 2100, you don't, even though it's got it, you don't have to have it. In fact, when I podcast at work, I use the USB interface. And when I podcast at home, I use the XLR interface. So you can go either way with it. You don't have to have the mixer, but they've got these nice two channel XLR, you know, little bricks that you plug in the XLR to, and then that goes USB into your PC or Mac. And it does give you some control over your mic that you, you know, especially if you're using Windows, you get so poor control over your microphone in Windows. I like to have a something in between to control it a little bit better, especially in the you know, if you get a nicer board, you get a little EQ so you can add a little bass or take a little bass away or what have you to kind of tune up your voice a smidge.
Yeah, that's
And the sound coming back too, Dave, is important, right? The monitor that you're listening to yourself,
right?
That sometimes isn't great in just a straight with the XLR, with the ATR 2100 in Windows. That can be particularly tricky to get that interface back to you in a sound that's acceptable. And right. you can fix that with a mixer. So it's kind of a choice there.
Yeah, absolutely. I just know there just seemed to be a rampage.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Of people.
I agree with you. Yeah, it's crazy. Why are these people buying mixers?
Yeah, I have a guy that just signed up for my podcasting in 6 weeks class. And he said, you know, what gear should I buy? And I'm like, well, actually, we talk about that in week two. But if you want to get started, I just said, you know, are you podcasting solo or with a co-host? And he said solo. And I go, here you go. Audio Technica 2100. You're good to go. That was it. Because you don't really need a mixer in that case, especially if you're just starting out.
Yeah, in fact, I'd spend my money on the arm and not on anything else, because that can be, you know, an arm and a way to get your microphone quiet. Because if you buy that ATR by itself and you get that cheap little tripod, it works. And we use that for our guests on the Gallup podcast, and we mail every guest a microphone. We talked about that before. I have that guest set it up with that tripod. Not always the greatest. You know, if they bump the table, you hear boom. You know, kind of thing.
Right.
So
that's always fun.
So
excellent. Well, hey, I am going to play the jingle again just because this is fun.
Right.
If you want to call in, that number again is 888. In fact, I should put this in the chat room. It's 888-563-3228. And if you have any questions, I know we've had people say, you know, am I allowed to ask a question about this or that? And it's like, hey, call on in. We would love to. Any question is apropos. And, I thought
we had some trouble with the call-in number, with it being a little laggy and you getting dropped.
Yeah, so. I would love to. I thought about that at the expo. I'm like, am I going to go back and use call-in studio? And I'm like, well, I'm going to give them another shot, you know, and see what happens. You know, maybe they had a bad day, and we'll see what happens.
Fair enough.
I thought until we, plus I have $23 on account that I have to burn through. So I thought maybe when we get down to zero, like, all right, well, maybe we'll bring people in via Skype, or we've talked about a couple different things, but, and you know me, I'll try anything. I always love to test stuff. So, let's see, we do have a question in the chat room. When I was researching podcasting, this is from George Jackson, almost every credible resource recommended a mixer, but I started doing a show with three co-hosts over Skype, and I assumed I needed a mixer and found out handy, to have to do different things. It is handy. It's always,
it's a good tool.
Yeah, it's a good tool to have. But if you're just starting out and if you're on a budget, you know, you don't really need it in many cases to start. So I thought I would share a little bit about New Media Expo. I was out there in Vegas, and which I picked the best time to go. My wife sent me a picture from inside the car where you have the little thermostat, and it read -12 in Cleveland while I was in Vegas. I was like, man, did
it got cold on us.
Yeah. And I've been telling people is either really good or really bad. It was there were very few places where it was mediocre. Like the people that you expect to bring their A game, the Michael Hyatts, the Ray Edwards, the Dan Millers, the Pat Flynns, and some other people, just really great content. Michael Hyatt has a great way of bringing what I call, it's kind of common sense stuff. But you just kind of go, oh, yeah, you know, that's an easy way to do that. So I really liked his session. But there was a sponsor, and New Media Expo has kind of, it's a tough road to hoe. You got to have a sponsor. Otherwise, there's no show. And I forget the sponsor from last year, but they were the concluding keynote And they did this whole thing. It was hilarious where it was about TV of the future. It's going to be interactive and futuristic and zip, zip, zap, 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 blah, wow, pow. And this is going to be like something you've never seen before. And they brought Chris Hardwick out from The Nerdist. And my favorite thing was they had this woman sit on a stool that was no less than 4 feet tall. She had to climb into it. And she was going to be sharing your tweets on the big screen. Man, was that a bad idea. Because the guy came out and he wasn't talking to his audience. He was basically talking at them. It might as well have been a play. He's just reading the lines. And Chris Hardwick actually came out and somewhat poked fun of the session he was in because they had this, again, futuristic band that was playing. And he said, I didn't know the Star Wars band was going to serenade me while I was being talked to. And so we all started kind of cracking on it. And of course, I think one or two of those tweets got onto the big screen. And then we saw the same eight positive tweets go and go and go. So that was a case where that sponsor didn't really understand that this audience wants real stuff. And this year, this guy came out. His name was Marshall Silver. He's a hypnotist in Vegas and came out and just did the hard sell from what I understand. Now, I didn't go to the session. I know I walked in to, I was going to go into the podcast awards, which were after him, and I wanted to get there early because there were times during the keynotes where you had to sit on the floor. And that would be one thing I would say to New Media Expo. How about getting some more chairs? I'm sniffing 50 here. My butt doesn't want to sit on the floor. And it was one thing to have that situation for the first keynote, but I'm like, you got three more days. Can you not go to somebody and go, we need about 16 more chairs and a couple tables would be nice, but maybe they only had what they could have. But this guy actually came out and explained how he'd paid $150,000 to be a sponsor. And I drive a whatever $400,000 car. This is my, gazillion dollar house. And I have, a gazillion houses all over the country. And look at me. I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm rich. And he actually made it rain. Like he went into the audience and threw money at them. So this was the major, somebody said it was like, they say, take an infomercial, add like bad 1990s graphics to it, and that's what you had. And what was funny about that was the audience, again, took to Twitter, especially when the guy went over. So from what I understand, that was not a great session. Now, there were some people that drank the Kool-Aid because he was selling books in the back and things like that. So that was an example where, from what I understand, that was pretty horrible. And when I went to the booth, I usually come back from New Media Expo with tons of interviews from vendors. And one of the vendors was a teeth whitening company, which I guess if you were on video, but one was a back massager. And the only thing that was kind of cool about it is the interface looked like an iPod, and you put these little electrodes on your back, and it's the kind of things you see at a chiropractor. Now, for the record, I bought one because my wife has a really sore neck, but they were their culture was from a culture where you haggled the price. So I walked up and I'm like, oh, what is this? And they're like, oh, it's this thing. It's a back massager, blah, blah, blah. $200. And I'm like, I don't know who you're talking to, but I spent all my money on plane tickets. And by the time I got out of there, it was under $100. Because like, no, wait, let me tell you what, I throw this in for free. And I'm like, no, I'm not really interested. Okay, what if it was $149? Well, I got to save my money for, I got to eat still. And they just kept bringing the price down and down.
So you got to eat still.
Yeah. So it was interesting that they, on one hand, I kind of go, okay, well, we're geeky people. But I was like, I don't understand, why isn't Audio-Technica there? Why isn't Behringer there? Stitcher was there 1 year. They weren't here this year. The CEO was there. But what was interesting is in the middle of one of his keynotes, it was Leo Laporte, the guy from Westward One, which is now Podcast One, and Noah from Stitcher, the CEO. And the guy, I heard two people do this. They loaded Stitcher on their phone during that talk. And Stitcher automatically starts like giving you directions when you load it. And this guy in front of me couldn't figure out how to make his phone shut up. And I just thought, if you had a booth and actually showed people how to use the app, you might get more users. And so the booths were, in my opinion, a little like there wasn't, I don't know what I would award best in show. One of them was, something like Coupon Scout or something like that. It was basically a tool for people who surf the internet, which, okay, you have a lot of bloggers, a lot of podcasters, but there weren't any like tools that I was like, oh, wow, I can't wait to tell my audience about this. I did learn some cool stuff. And Jim, I know you play a lot with hosting and things like that. Were you aware, I think most people are, maybe not, that HostGator, Bluehost, I think iPowerWeb, there are like 30 different hosting companies that are now owned by the same company.
Mm, yeah, they've all consolidated.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that, and I didn't know, is that those companies are going to be going public, or that company is going to be going public. And because I said, well, it's kind of weird. I've been using HostGator for almost 20 years. And the last time I went on their chat, and this is unheard of, I had to wait, I think it was 24 minutes. And I was like, whoa, where is everybody? Because normally it's like, you know, there are 8 bazillion, you know, people online. Your average wait is, you know, 2 to 7 minutes. And I get on, it was like 24. Now, they were very helpful once I got there. But I was like, wow, that was a bit of a wait. And they said they're cutting corners because they've got to show profits for this as they get ready to go public. And I was like, hmm. So so if you're on Bluehost or HostGator, I don't think they're bad companies now, but it's going to be interesting to see as they go through this transition, can they keep their customer service now that they're eventually going to be answering to stockholders?
Dave, you covered a lot just in that little segment. Let me go back to a thought you had about New Media Expo. Cause I got to view it from afar.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't there. I had some questions for you around, you know, cause you know, if you're a podcaster, you wanted to be there this year. And I think New Media Expo is in that weird middle ground with conferences now, where they're big enough that they've got all the big conference problems, but they're not big enough to be able to handle them. And because they, you know, the leadership, it takes a different kind of a person, I think, or group to build a small, a medium, and a large conference. They just have different, you know, they've got different problems associated with them, different ideas, different ways of running things. You got to go after different kinds of sponsors and such. And I think they're in that middle ground where they're having a really difficult time. You know, you talk about the vendors, and Mike Phillips is in chat. We were, you know, we're talking about some of the big names you mentioned, you know, as far as, you know, just all the mixer companies, you know, Alesis or Yamaha or Audio Technica. Why are they not there, you know, doing those kinds of things? And you got with some of those companies, you really got to go after them and show them why they should be there. I know with our Oracle conferences that we do, I have to do a little bit of a pitch. I have to say, hey, let me tell you, this is why you should be a part of our conference. And this is what you will see. And then those companies have to come to the conference with the right frame of mind, right? They're not coming to sell things all the time, but they're coming to provide service or do evangelism or those kinds of things. So I think, and then I think CES is a problem for them. Is as much as you think that it's cool to be right ahead of CES, and you know, I thought too, hey, I should just go to New Media Expo and I'll just stay for CES. That's horribly convenient. The thing we run into with our conferences when we schedule them is if I schedule them too close to a big Oracle event, everybody's run out of money for. You know, they all run the big events,
right?
They all go to CES and they spend all their capital on CES because why? They're going to get 160,000 people to come by their booths when they do that, or at least the potential for that. So with New Media Expo being right up front, you'd think you get some synergy. I don't think you do.
No.
You mentioned in the pre-show, you'd like to see them move it to a different location. I couldn't agree more. Move it to a different location that is probably sunnier and more of a meetup feel, because I still don't think they're a big conference. One of the questions I want to ask you, and I think this is what we struggle from, we've mentioned this before, that there's been this huge, with the popularity of podcasting, there's been this huge group of people who have come on who say, I bought all the equipment, now what do I podcast about, right?
Right.
You know, that's kind of the wrong way to go about it. Did you get that feel at New Media Expo that there were people showing up there that didn't even have a podcast?
There were actually a fair number of people. I know in our session, I was in a couple sessions where people have said, you know, who doesn't have a podcast yet but wants one? There were a lot of hands there. So that was encouraging for me because that, of course, is kind of who I'm looking to know. The thing, I was talking with Rob Walsh from Libsyn, and he was saying, and Mike Phillips in the chat might have a better insight into this. it's the NAB. I believe it's the National Association of Broadcasters has a convention. That might be a good type of, you know, if, instead of CES, maybe pony up with them and try to be around them. They might get some people that, you know, would want. I would love to go to that one. That sounds like an interesting type of convention.
The money, and Mike's making a good, both Kathy and Mike out there making a good point. This made me think of this. You know, with CES, I can oftentimes get corporate sponsorship, right? In other words, someone will pay me to go to CES.
Right.
And be there as a part of that. As a podcaster, most of us still aren't in the place, and I might be a little different because I podcast at work now.
Right.
Gallup's still not in the position where they would necessarily send me to New Media Expo, but I can see a day when that might happen. But that's not the norm, right? Podcasting is still very entrepreneur. It's still very, you know, where you're a one-person wonder in an organization. You're doing it as a hobby. It doesn't bring in that kind of money. And so it does get expensive. Kathy said she'd go, but it came right after Christmas. And it's expensive. Vegas, you would think, especially that weekend, that's the most expensive weekend in Vegas. Because you know, you have CES coming up. They typically, in the past, they've always done a couple big conferences around CES. I mean, Vegas is jammed, and they all raise their rates, you know, during those weeks. So, you know, maybe a cheaper venue, a cheaper place, a cheaper time in Vegas. You know, in April, May timeframe, something like that.
Yeah, that was the other thing that, you know, you can't plan for this, but there were vendors that were planning on attending, and they couldn't leave. I barely got out of Cleveland. I know the night before I left, I pulled up the Cleveland Hopkins Airport website and everything was delayed and canceled. And I went, oh, this is not good.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
We couldn't even get one of our guys. We were trying to send in to CES. We couldn't even get him there. He never made it.
Yeah. And CC Chapman was coming from Boston and he was a couple days late. It was not easy to get in. And I was worried about getting out. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to fly back because it was, again, getting cold. So that was another thing that they had no control over. So that could have improved because one of them was about, it was a traffic generator, something to do with link, something. Because I remember I just got an email from this morning. We had hoped to meet each other at the expo and they didn't make it in and maybe we can connect on offline now. But it is, okay. I wonder where he was. Andrew Zarian got stranded in Cancun because that was one guy I really thought I would meet up at that. So yeah, the weather was not kind this year. So I think between the weather and the interesting hypnotist, you know, those are a couple of things I think that will be remembered for this expo.
Dave, what's your one big takeaway from New Media Expo? I mean, if you could pick one thing that you said, yeah, this was worth the price of admission, what would that one thing be?
Boy, there were a couple. For me, what I ended up doing, it sounds weird. There were sessions that I went to, but there were times when I would look up and they were kind of, you know, podcasting 101 or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I'm not really going to get probably much out of that. And I would start a conversation with somebody. If I was talking with somebody that said, hey, Dave, I listen to your podcast or I'm a member of the school of podcasting or something like that. My focus was once I got there was I want to know as much about that person as I can. Cause the more I know about my audience, the better the content I can create. And when I went to a few sessions, that was always step one, get to know your audience. Michael Hyatt had a 53 question survey. And he was talking about using SurveyMonkey. And he was just kind of saying, look, if you don't have an audience yet, or if you do have an audience and you're not sure what to podcast about, ask them, you know, just put a survey at the, you know, make it sticky at the top of your page. And he's going to actually come out with a report here and kind of show what he learned. But that was the thing that I kind of walked away with was for my mantra for 2014, because last year it was all about, I want to investigate what makes good content. And this year I've been saying, I want to interview my audience. I want to find out what makes them tick, where they're at, what their biggest pains are, things like that. So my little catchphrase is this year, it's not numbers, it's names. I want to know names, you know? And so when I was standing in the keynote room and this woman named Amy came up and she listens to Podcasters Roundtable. So just stuff like that I was like, okay, here's somebody who actually listens to me. How can I make my show better for you? Because if I make it better for them, I make it better for everyone. So that was probably one of the big keys. And it just came up over and over and over with step one was, who are you podcasting to? And it kind of comes back. We've talked about, you know, kind of narrow casting instead of niche casting, right? So that was probably one of the big takeaways.
Did Kathy said last year she went as a blogger and you got her on, you got her podcasting mm-hmm. right away. Did you get a feel that this conference was more about podcasting than the blogging side of things, or are they still, because it used to be, you know, back in the day it was a blogger conference as opposed to necessarily podcasting was a niche of it. Has that switched?
There's a little, it's weird because I remember there was one session about being a better writer. And in theory, you know, good content is good content. So I saw one that was specifically designed for bloggers. I saw one that was specifically designed for web series. So, you know, YouTube and things like that. But a lot of them were kind of, you know, just generic how to grow your audience. Well, that applies to, you know, bloggers. It applies to podcasters. Sure. Things like that. I know I did a session with Daniel J. Lewis from the Audacity to Podcast and Ray Ortega from Podcaster Studio. And really, we started off our session saying, you know, we're talking about growing your podcast audience, but, you know, putting one of the things that I brought up that I was always amazed at that brought a fair amount of traffic was just having a signature in your email with a clickable link. I was always amazed because I actually tracked it 1 month, how much traffic I got from people clicking the link in my email signature. And that applies to anybody, a blogger, a, you know, web person, a podcaster, things like that. So it was, you know, there were some sessions like that that were kind of just open to all. Or Michael Hyatt's was about building your brand. Well, that kind of applies to all of the above. But the podcasting track definitely had, I know I just listened to Cliff's show, and he said they doubled the number of rooms, and they still had rooms that were kind of packed to the gill. The one thing I would say that was kind of confusing is they had these things called super sessions. So they weren't keynotes, but they were kind of, they weren't going on when all the other sessions were going. So they're kind of special ones. And then an example, one was Michael Hyatt and the other one was Pat Flynn. So this is like your A-list people, and they had them against each other. So you had to pick, who do you want to go to? Pat or Michael. And in my case, I've seen Pat speak. I'm really bummed. I have the virtual ticket, so I'm going to be able to hear it. But I went to Michael Hyatt's, and that's the only thing I can think of, because I was like, why would they do that? Why would you, you know, burn both your, you know, your top artists here, for lack of a better phrase? And the only thing I can think of is they're trying to push the virtual ticket, because the only way you can hear that now is to buy the virtual ticket. I don't know. I found that confusing that they put those two against each other.
So would you go back next year, Dave? Is this after coming, you know, seeing it again this year? Is it on your, well, or let's say that two questions. One, will you go back next year? And two, will you recommend it for people next year?
Yeah, I will. It's something that, you know, you need to kind of save up for. It's not a cheap endeavor. I mean, I luck out. I get to attend the conference for free. So it's easy for me to say, sure, I'm going back. Because when I get to speak, I get to go for free. Now, I still have to pay for my hotel room, and I still have to pay for the plane ticket. So it's not cheap by any means. But the meeting people that I get to meet is always worth it. And typically, I get a lot of content. I actually did get some really good interviews. And this is one of the things that's kind of cool about it, is I got to, you know, there are, and I see in the chat room here, Mike says A-list is subjective. That is true. But I found some people that are having success with their podcast. I got to interview Grammar Girl, who's been on Oprah, who's been on the Today Show, and has basically built a podcasting empire. And, you know, it's just one thing to actually get to meet her and talk to her face to face. And that was really cool. And there's a friend of mine I've known for years named George Robb, who is now, after 7 years, finally monetizing his podcasting, who was like, yeah, this is, wow, I don't know why I didn't do this sooner. So for me, getting the content is another kind of bonus. And I know Ryan Parker's in the chat room, and I was sitting one day and again talking with somebody that had been in my Start Podcasting in 6 Weeks class, Gary Palmer. And Gary's an interesting story, because he came in to that class. He was going to do a podcast about facilities management, because that's what his job was. And after going through that class, he said, the one thing I've learned is I'm not going to do a podcast about facilities management. My passion is fishing. So he's starting this podcast. He lives pretty much on the ocean, and he eats a lot of fish and loves to cook fish And I think his tagline is going to be good fishing, good cooking. And Ryan Parker is sitting right next to me, and I go, oh, well, this guy's a chef. And boy, those two hit it off, talking about different recipes and how to cook fish and things like that. So to me, that's kind of some of the magic that happens at these places, that where you can meet somebody that either A, you're going to partner with, or you just, you know, it's nice to meet like-minded people. So, yeah, I definitely will be going back. Even if I don't speak, I think I would go back. I don't know that I would. I don't know if it'd be great if they had like a hallway pass. You know, like I don't really need to see the booth. I don't really need to go to the sessions. I just need to get to the hallway so I can meet people.
A hall pass.
Yes. Can I get a hall pass?
You could probably do that anyways, to be honest with you, right? Do they badge you into to those areas?
That's a good question. When I walked into the Rio, no.
CES. There's plenty of hallways.
Yeah, there's plenty. You could actually, yeah, just walk into the Rio.
Hang out in the hallway.
There you go.
Yeah.
And just catch people. And right. I'm trying to think about when there's a place where you kind of go in to sit down as you're going into the booths.
We mentioned this at the top of the segment, though, that, you know, just to get to Vegas on that weekend is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might as well, that your expense, your major expense isn't going to be the conference. Although, what do they charge? What's a conference pass? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. Maybe somebody in the chat room can fill that in, what they paid. Yeah, Ryan says the lounge pass.
Right.
Right. I know I think the virtual ticket was over $1,000.
Okay. It's a little bit, but you're going to pay at least that much for housing or a room.
Yeah.
And then you got to get there. You know, depending on where you're coming from. And if you're not in the United States, it gets even more expensive. Much of an international feel there at all, or was it just pretty much everybody from the U.S.?
Actually, there were. Mike Russell and Isabella Russell from Music Radio Creative were there. And Ryan says anywhere from $400 to $1,000 for a ticket. Ben Adam Smith, and I wish I could remember Ben's home. Oh, I can't remember his podcast, but he's a great guy. He had a phenomenal experience. For Ben Adam Smith, it was like a spiritual, like, awakening. He was just blown away by the people he was meeting. He says you can walk down the hall and you can have a conversation with a millionaire. Right there. Walking the halls. Brilliant. And so he was just having a complete out-of-body experience. And I met the one night, there was like one guy from Scotland and a couple more people from the UK. So, yeah, it was definitely had some people that made the trip. So that was fun. The one thing that it's hard to do in Vegas, it is hard to find a quiet space. They had a meetup at a different hotel across the street, and it was basically a bar. Now, there wasn't loud music, but the problem is when you get enough people, it just gets loud. I went to Mike and Isabella's meetup, and it was in this wine cellar of the Rio. And it's this really nice, it was a lovely room. They had like four or five couches, and I'm just hanging out with people and talking. But all of a sudden, more and more people started showing up, and now you've got this small room with like 20 people, and it just starts to get loud. So that was one of my biggest worries, was just keeping my voice, because there are times when you're doing one of these things where, hey, tell me about your podcast. You know,
yeah.
And they had one thing the first night in the Voodoo Lounge, and it was on the 52nd floor. Now, it was cool to go up to the 52nd floor and look out over the city, but it was seriously the whole
thing.
And I'm like, I can't talk over that.
Where were you at again?
I was at the Rio.
The Rio. I've been to the Rio. It's been a long time, but okay. Yeah, I've been up there. That's a nice place.
Yeah, it's interesting. Vegas in itself is just a weird place. You know, when you've got a Judge Judy slot machine, I'm like, really? Judge Judy? I'm like, look at the demographic. I guess that makes sense.
It is an interesting place.
And the Dolly Parton slot machine.
Dave, you found out a couple of weeks ago I'm an avid runner, and I love to run a lot. Vegas is one of my favorite places to actually run. And I like to get up, because I'm a Midwestern guy, I like to get up. I can get up super early in Vegas, like 5, and it doesn't feel very early, right? It feels like 7 o'clock in the morning or whatever here. And I'll run the strip, and if you stay on the north end or the south end of the strip, down and back is a 10K, which is kind of cool. So I'll run that. Well, running the strip at 5 in the morning in California, in Vegas time, 5 in the morning, all the bingers and all the hookers are coming in.
Nice.
And it's interesting to just see the crowd you see the dirtiest side of Vegas, right? The night lights, flashy, this is cool.
Right.
Not. It's not that. You see the daylight, dirty. Oh, and then it has really changed my impression of Vegas. You know, you're kind of like, oh, this is really a dirty city.
Yeah. One of the saddest things I've ever seen in Vegas, this was years ago, and there was an older woman, I'm going to guess 70 plus, and probably back in the early 90s, late 80s, there was a fad where if you had a child, they had these plastic stretchy leashes that you would just, you know, clip it to a belt loop on your kid and go to the mall. And she had chained herself with this plastic chain to her slot machine. I'm not sure why. And just to symbolize that this is mine, I'm not moving. I don't know what the deal was, but she just was just this weird picture of like, wow, this is her life.
And the worst of Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you made it. You came back. I think there'll be some, Media Expo stories here yet to come out over the next couple of weeks as you remember things for sure.
Yeah. Mike has a great point here. He says $2,000 or more to attend the annual meeting of Mutual Admiration Society.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Any conference can be like that, right? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what those things are about. And you've got to, you know, CES, I mentioned earlier, and for a lot of podcasters, CES is the major event of the year.
Yeah.
And it's probably, you know, and I stole this from somebody else, but it is the most overcovered tech event now that's done. Everybody, you know, Engadget and CNET and The Verge, they all have these big, gigantic studios there. 5 years ago, when we started covering it as podcasters, you could cover it as a small independent podcaster and have some significant coverage. And it was cool. Well, money has jumped in, you know, now, and the big firms have come in and really throw a lot of money at CES. And so, as a small podcaster, you're kind of like, you know, what can I really cover this any better or any, you know, in any different way? And so, with CES and all that is, there is, you know, that has become a lot of backslapping, you know, especially among the podcasters. It's a who's who of podcasting out there at CES. And so it is, well, CES, Kathy asked, what does CES stand for? So it's the Consumer Electronics Show, biggest electronic show, I think, here, at least here in the United States. 150 to 200,000 people show up for this at the Las Vegas Convention Center. It's a big deal. And if you're a tech podcaster like I am, that's the big event. It's a big show for it. And so it too can be, you know, but we've actually seen a lot of innovation around podcasting out of CES. So, you know, guys going in with handheld cams and microphones, doing interviews off their iPhone, and then immediately uploading those interviews, you know, right to Snapchat, or that's probably not the right one to go to, but you know what I mean? Immediately moving those up to a Vimeo or a YouTube for immediate consumption. So there's some cool things that came out of that. It's a burst of activity all in one weekend, and then it's over kind of before you know it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to get more insight into this, we actually did a podcasters roundtable live from the floor with me and Ray and Daniel. Which was very interesting. As cool as live is, live with an audience in front of you is like the best ever.
Yeah,
we actually caused a problem because there were two booths doing live shows, and I don't know why, but we started attracting an audience. It was kind of fun. We kept getting the audience involved to where they actually blocked the aisle, and people couldn't get through to the next booth. So that was a cool thing to have.
Did you have a booth to do it with? How did you guys physically put that together? Yeah,
if you go to podcastersroundtable.com, you'll see a picture of us. It wasn't really – booths were basically just you have a curtain behind you and then kind of almost like a velvet rope to rope off like this is your section. So we just had a table there and we're each holding our Audio-Technica 2100s and Daniel was running the board, and then we had Nick Suberling from Start Talking and Recording Today was our roaming guy with a microphone to go into the audience. So, but we were talking about, you know, if you're just looking to meet people and network, you know, meetup.com or PodCamps. I'm not sure what's kind of, I know PodCamps in Ohio have kind of taken, been put on the back burner because people have, I don't know, had babies and got different jobs and things like that. But, you know, if there's a PodCamp, I've met some great people at PodCamps. I know Ray is now, you know, doing podcasting for a living because of somebody he met at a pod camp. So it's amazing. I went to a meetup for WordPress in Cuyahoga Falls, which is a suburb of a suburb of a suburb. And one of the guys that works for Automattic was at that show. And I was like, and there were like eight people. So it's a really, you know, you're not going to meet the same size of number of people, but again, you're kind of niching down. It was all about WordPress. And I was really amazed that here's this person that, you know, works for Automattic and had some great insights to that. So,
well, it sounds like they have a little work to do next year.
Yeah.
On New Media Expo, and hopefully they'll get, I just think it's a transitional problem for them and they'll get better at it. Hopefully they'll get better at it or change some leadership or something to, well, they continue to grow that thing.
They did announce one of the keynotes, and that is going to be Pat Flynn. And I was like, I would like to see more of that. From within kind of thing.
Now, Pat's a good speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really good at doing those kinds of things. And that's, you know, whether you agree with him or not, that is what you're looking for in a good keynote is, you know, and as good as, you know, I watched that keynote with Leo and the guy from Stitcher and the guy from Westwood One, podcast one. And as good as all three of them is, the guy from Westwood One is just, was just as arrogant as all can be.
Yeah.
In the, you know, in it, and you're like, okay, you know, I get that. The Stitcher guy was good.
Yeah.
And you know, you can tell he's an entrepreneur and he's really trying and he's struggling. Mm. And, you know, the guy from Westwood One is just a gajillionaire. And, you know, he doesn't really care if Podcast One survives or not. It's just, he was like, hey, I found a business need and I was just kind of making it happen. And, you know, kind of, it's just kind of a business opportunity. So I don't know. It's
kind of monopolize that session.
He did. And he sat in the middle and just the way he sat and he looked and he kind of went, you know, he had some good points. And I think, Dave, you know, if we're going to advertise in the podcasting community and we're going to niche down, we have to get together, right? Because advertisers are not going to buy us when we are 10,000 downloads. I mean, well, they will, but you know what I mean? It's tougher for them to do that. They need to be able to see results very, very quickly. And I think that was my takeaway from listening to that keynote is that as podcasters, we're going to have to create these mini networks to have some kind of influence on advertising dollars if that's the route you want to go. Let me tell you an interesting thing that came up on, so Thursday I was doing my own tech podcast and I don't take any advertisements for mine. It's completely ad free and all that we do. And we keep it that way. And I shouldn't say that's not true. I do pimp my Amazon link, but then we turn those Amazon dollars back into giveaway. You know, I give that back away to the listeners through tech stuff that we buy for them to review. So not totally ad free, but for the most part. And one of the guys piped in the chat room and said, you know what? That's one of the reasons I listen to this podcast is because I don't have to listen to the advertisements.
Mm.
And so I think you have to, if you're a podcaster and you're considering or you're thinking that the holy grail of podcasting is to get high enough CPM that you can, again, begin to track advertising. I think you talked about surveys. I think you might want to survey before you start doing advertising. Survey your audience. See if they want advertising because you may turn to advertising, see your numbers just plummet because you've become a corporate stooge, so to speak. So that might be a smart thing to think about before you jump on the advertising bandwagon is to ask your audience, will you tolerate advertising?
Yeah. And I think it's got to be, you know, that's something that I forget who I was talking to or I saw somewhere that was like how to write a good radio commercial. And as much as, you know, I'm not a fan of radio, but there, you know, you have to, if you want people to support your sponsor, you've got to present it in a way that's not, you know, this Sunday kind of thing, but you got to make sure it's working. And it's interesting because I know there are a few, not a lot, but there are some people that are really having decent traction with donations. Now, the thing with that is, whatever it is, whether it's a sponsor or donations, you still have to ask for it. That was the one of the key things I heard in a couple different sessions was, look, if you're going to monetize this, number one, it takes some time to build that audience and build that trust. But eventually, you're going to have to ask for it. It's not a case where people are just going to go, well, I wonder what Dave's selling today. Let me see what I can find on his website to click. You got to ask for it.
Yeah. Well, let me differentiate, because Mike Phillips makes an interesting point. He says, Jim, without advertising or subscription models, how can you make a living podcasting? Okay. I'm talking about the advertising model of getting other people to advertise on your podcast. So that's what I'm talking about, is where you're advertising for GoDaddy, or you're advertising for
WP Audible. Engine.
Yeah. Or whatever. When I'm certainly, if you're self-promoting, right? If you're doing your own,
right.
If you're selling your own product, or you're talking about your own product, I think that's a little bit different. So it's, if you've got something to sell and you're talking about it, I think that's one thing. And you know, he makes an interesting point. You know, it's like, so why would I do this if I can't, if I want to make a living out of this? And my point was is that if you've attracted an audience and then you start advertising, you start doing third-party advertising, you might want to ask your audience before you start. That's my point. Just to make sure, you might lose them.
I think that's a key, third-party advertising, because I know, like on my Logical Weight Loss podcast, I talk about Fitbit because I own one. I love it. It might as well be my product. Now that's an affiliate arrangement, but people, you know, buy those things through my link, and I get $9 every time they do. It's awesome. But if I just started pimping something that didn't fit my audience, and maybe I've done that once. There was an advertisement came through from my weekly web tool show, and I kind of looked at the company, looked at him, was like, yeah, okay, I think my audience would like them, but it was something that I would never use. So I was really talking just from the talking points. I didn't really have any firsthand knowledge, and I don't think I would ever do that again. It was just, it felt very weird to just be, you know, hey, this is the best thing ever. And I'm like, I guess it looks good from what I see, and I don't see any complaints in their forums and things like that. So
go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you'll hear it eventually on the School of Podcasting. It's a really long interview because it just was great. This friend of mine named George Robb does a podcast called the Geologic Podcast. He's a skeptic. It's kind of funny because you have a guy that was at one point on a track to be a pastor talking to basically a extremely outspoken atheist. But the good news is we agree on a lot of other things, even though we disagree on that. And he said when he started up a membership thing where if you're a member of this, you get an extra episode and an extra email. And if you do the $8 a month plan, you get a T-shirt and you get special pricing on this and that. So he has these little monthly memberships. And he said when he started it, the thing that really blew him away was people saying, thank you for creating this. Now I have some way to support you. And I was like, really? Because at the end of his show, he always says he's a musician as well. He's a professional drummer. And he said, at the end of his show, it's like, look, if you like this show and you'd like to support the show, you know, buy George's book or any of his CDs at CD Baby. And, you know, he always talks about how to spell his last name is H-R-A-B. So there was always plenty of opportunity to go support George, but maybe you're not a fan of his music, but you love his podcast. Well, this was a way to get more of that content. And he said, yeah, he was really surprised that people were like, thank you for giving me a way to give me, for me to give you money. And I was like, really? And I said, have you had any backlash from it? And he's like, absolutely not. But here again, he does really short, simple advertisements for his own stuff. He said every time he does a commercial, he records 5 different versions of it. So you don't have to hear the same one over and over and over again. And he said, so far, it's working out good. So I thought that was really interesting insight.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I was going to mention, you know, we talked about, you know, kind of pimping products you use. You'd mentioned, you know, I don't even, you know, we got this thing, but I don't use it. Yeah, I find it interesting. I talk about it. There's some products I talk a lot about that I really can't even make any money off of, you know, like the earbuds that I use when we podcast. I love, you know, these are athletic earbuds that are like in-ear monitors, and they're dynamite for podcasting. And I've gone to them several times and have said, hey, can I get an affiliate link? And they're like, we don't do affiliate. All right. Well, that's not going to stop me from, recommending, you know, your earbuds as for podcasters. So sometimes too, you're going to get, you know, it's one of those things I believe in. So it's just like, okay, yeah, if you're going to buy them, these are the kind that you need to have. This is what I like anyways. And it gives you a good opportunity it's a karma thing too. I think what comes around goes around, you know, it doesn't always have to be. Mike Phillips makes an interesting point in chat about I think we have to be careful, Dave, that this space will only support, it's like anything else, it's only going to support so many people being successful. And I think even if you jump in and you do all the right things, does not necessarily guarantee success in a lot of ways. And if success is painted as being fully, you know, as being a gajillionaire podcaster, there's only going to be a couple that are going to be there. The rest of us are going to be struggling in it, and it's going to be difficult. And Dustin asked the question, some tips on, do you have any tips for creating products? Back to my mention about, you know, about selling your product on the podcast. Well, the tip is you sell what you're currently doing, right? I mean, if you've got, we do my work podcast with Gallup, you know, the Called to Coach podcast that we do. We talk about strengths codes, right? Our opportunity is to go to the GallupStrengthCenter.com and pick up a strengths code and take that assessment and discover what your top five strengths are. We have a whole ecosystem around that. That's why we do the podcasting, right? It's to help people who have taken those, to advance that cause, so to speak, and to help people and coaches who are helping with those. It's like a life coach kind of thing. Yeah. So, you know, you can use it for what you're currently, it's a marketing tool.
Right.
I call it social marketing, and that's nothing new, but podcasting is a form of social marketing. It's an opportunity to advance the cause of which you're trying to get out.
Yeah, here's a great tool I just discovered. If you're selling digital products, check out Gumroad.com. I just discovered them, and you set up a payment plan or a payment, like you can have it go directly to your checking account. And their fees are just the same. It looks like the same as PayPal, because some places there's a fee for them to basically provide a shopping cart, and then you pay the PayPal fees because it works with PayPal. So you're kind of getting dinged twice. This, you pay the fees once and it goes right to your checking account. Mm. And it's called, I just had it. What would I say? Gumroad. I'm looking at a link. Yes. Gumroad.com.
You mentioned donations, and I think they're hard to get, but I think for some communities that I think you said this, but it makes more sense, and they'll do it. I mean, we've had in other podcast communities I've been a part of, we've had guys donate, and specifically for infrastructure things, like we wanted to upgrade our forums, and the software was $399, you know, $399.
Right.
And so a couple guys kicked in, you know, a couple hundred bucks each to make that happen. And then they got, you know, in the forums, they were tagged donator or donation or whatever, contributor, whatever. Because you want to give them a little credit, right, for that as well. The other, you know, we've had some people where somebody in the communities had some, you know, a loss of some kind. And so a couple guys kicked in, you know, 50 bucks each. I had 10 guys kick in 50 bucks each so we could replace some of the equipment that was lost. So depending on the community, you can oftentimes garner that kind of support as well within the community. So I think it depends on the community that you've gathered as well, if that's going to be appropriate or not. Donations will work. I've gotten one donation in the 4 years I've done this. And they contacted me and said, hey, I'm trying to find your donation link. Where is that? And I'm like, oh, I don't really have one. He's like, well, make one. I want to give you a donation.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing. That's the only time I've ever seen a donation.
I've had a few on my Logical Weight Loss podcast, and I've always referred to them as a producer. If you'd like to help, you know, produce the show, go out to logicalloss.com/support, click on the donate button. And I'm actually, give me 2 seconds. There's a plugin for donations. It works with PayPal. And if my website would update, I would give you the name of it. It is called Donate Extra. And it'll actually, you can put a short code. And as people, if they want their name, you know, public, you can actually make a wall of kind of donators. So they can actually, you know, get their name in the book, for lack of a better phrase. So that's a WordPress. It's free. Again, it's called Donate Extra, if you just search for that. And then I see where Dustin had asked a question about, I think he asked a question about making podcasts, right? Because I wanted to share this. I talked about Michael Hyatt because I realized we're running out of time. But here's something to think about. He said, you need to figure out what is your clear value proposition. And when we're talking about donations, we're talking about delivering value. And he says, you identify, you know, what is your identity? Here it is. Your identity plus your audience plus your unique solution equals transformation. So he was talking about making information that would transform your audience. And it's basically, I am blank. I help blank do or understand blank by blank. so they can blank. So it might be, I am Dave Jackson. I help people launch successful podcasts and understand RSS feeds. I help people understand RSS feeds and podcasting and media so they can launch successful podcasts by providing step-by-step tutorials so they can get their point across. So it was kind of an exercise he did. I am blank. I help blank do blank by blank. I realize that's a lot of blanks. I'll put this in the show notes. You'll see it at askthepodcastcoach.com. I put the show notes over there now, as well as on the School of Podcasting. But that was just something that I said. Again, it's not rocket science, but I kind of walked away and went, okay, yeah, I need to figure out what does make me different. Why should somebody listen to me? What am I trying to do? And how am I going to go about doing that? And what can they expect? And things like that. So anyway.
All right. I think we've wrapped another hour.
And that's the fun thing. When I'm using too many systems going on here, I was laughing because I was I was looking at my notes on my iPad because that's where I took the notes. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I got to go back to the other app now so I can play the music. So
we'll have to call this a New Media Expo wrap and determine that we won't come back to New Media Expo for a while.
Yeah.
And move on with helpful Your Questions Live.
Yeah, it's Your Questions Live. Yeah, Ryan Parker said he thought Hyatt's presentation was one of the best that I saw. Very cool. So yeah, it was cool hanging out with Ryan. He's a good guy. And that's again, was one of the pullways for me, was actually getting to know people a little more at the expo. So Jim, I'm glad to hear you're on the mend.
Thank you.
And
good to be back among the land of the living.
Yeah, we'll be back here at 10:30 every Saturday. So get your questions in. You can always call them in 888-563-3228. That'll go to our voicemail, or in the event that you hear this later, and you're like, oh, I can't get up that early on a Saturday morning, we would love to have them. And, of course, Jim, how can people find you?
Yeah, I'll add at theaverageguy.tv.
There you go. You can find me over at schoolofpodcasting.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.